You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a political analyst talks about what Donald Trump would have to do to win over Republican voters here in Wisconsin. First, why would anyone hang bells on a buzzard? What does it take to carry guts to a bear? What is a belly smacker? And is being a backwoodser a good or a bad thing? It all comes down to your own local version of the English language. And as Wisconsin comedian Rob Brackenridge points out, some may say we talk a little differently here in the Midwest.
We have our own little language out here. We say stuff that no one else would say, like, come here real quick once. You want me to come over there really fast one time? And we're the only ones, you know what we call traffic signals? What do we call them? Stop and go lights, yeah! It makes sense, because that's what you do. That's what everyone else calls them, stoplights, but that's just because they focus on the negative. Right? In Wisconsin, we know eventually you're going to go. Yeah, we'd be happy just calling them go lights, wouldn't we?
Words and phrases like these, distinctly Midwestern sayings, they're the kind of thing you can find in the latest quarterly update of the Dictionary of American Regional English, also called DARE. The dictionary, a project of the UW, started over 50 years ago, documents words and phrases that vary by region across the United States. The entire six-volume dictionary was published in 2012. It also lives online now. The third and fourth quarterly updates have just been released, both of them focusing on the letter B. With us now is the chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, George Gable. George, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Well, you shared, and I mentioned this briefly, one of your favorite phrases in the B edition that's baffling us here, to bell a buzzard.
Yes, well, that's very strange. It's a thing. You say that someone is too stupid or hasn't brains enough to bell a buzzard. We picked this up in the 60s when the project did a questionnaire all over the country. Had a few people to say this and variations on it. So recently I did more research on this. That's why it's in a revised version online now. And it's an expression. And one of the curious things I discovered is doing research is also that there are occasional accounts of people who find buzzards that have had bells tied to them. But no one knows why it's done or why it's an obvious thing, why someone who is stupid
wouldn't be able to.
Right, why it's a sign of stupidity. But expressions like this are sometimes very strange.
And I'll admit, George, a lot of my mental energy today has been devoted to trying to figure out why someone would put a bell on a buzzard. But let's turn to the bigger picture now. Talk a little bit about the dictionary. So we think of English language, a lot of the time is this one thing. We have it mostly in common, but it turns out from the work you do there's so much variety, so much fun and interesting variety, depending on where you are, just within the United States. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, well, definitely. Language is something that, exists at all different levels. So there's an everyday part of it, which you don't learn from books, you don't learn from television, you're not influenced by things like that because you're talking about things that don't come up in that kind of context. You really are dependent on what you hear around you. And that leads to variation. And different places, different expressions.
Now, you're always hunting for these regional variations and words and phrases at the dictionary there. Does everybody have them, or are there some places that are really hot spots where you find a really rich tapestry of regionalisms?
Well, it's one of these things. To a certain extent, you're going to find more of this sort of thing in sort of backwatery places, but that's not entirely true. And urban areas are very often a very tight cultural area, and they will have peculiarities. I mean, they'll be very definitely, New York words or Boston words or something like that. So you really can't say that there's any place, part of the country, where you don't get this kind of thing.
And are you hunting just for fossils in the English language, old stuff that's still sticking around, or are we inventing new ones all the time?
It's a living, ongoing process. It certainly is happening all the time. It's one of these things that when you're looking at it historically, it's harder to pick up the latest things. We're not interested in those kind of slangy things, which have, you know, it's a flash in the pan, and either it disappears again or it spreads over the whole country and it's kind of trendy. That's interesting, but it's a very different kind of thing. So it takes a while to even know if something has just grown up in some area. But definitely it's not something that is just belongs to the past.
Talking to the chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, George Gable, that effort based here in Wisconsin, by the way, finding all the interesting, colorful, often variations of the language. Before we get to some of the stuff from the B edition, which is a big part of the new stuff, I want to give an example that people from outside of Wisconsin are, I was when I first moved here, surprised by the phrase parking ramp. And I grew up going into a parking structure. Some people have parking garages. Here we have ramps. And when people first said the phrase, I pictured this big, long incline that somehow people parked on. It's just like the parking structures. That's the kind of thing that might vary from region to region, and you don't know about it till you go there.
Yes, very much so. And I have to admit that until very recently, I've lived here most of my life in Madison. I was not aware that that was regional. I started to do the research. Yeah. And, you know, it's not a colorful, folky expression, but it's such a regional thing. And, you know, these things are interesting even if the word itself isn't real, you know, exciting like Bella Buzzard. And everyone likes that kind of thing. So do I. But it's interesting to look at things which you wouldn't think were interesting because they're all part of cultural history and how things spread.
Let's take a look at some of the new B words in this update. Here's one, I guess an ethnic food tradition, Berlinerkranz. I think I'm saying that close to right, and this is something I would eat, right?
Yes, yes. It's a kind of a sugar cookie, and it's made in a wreath shape. The name means literally a Berlin wreath. So you kind of think it was German, but it's not. It's a very Norwegian thing.
Interesting. And I imagine there's got to be a lot of the words, a lot of the regionalisms you come up with that are either words from a language that immigrants brought with them or a version or inspired by or maybe a translation of an ethnic tradition.
Absolutely. That's certainly a very common thing. So this is just what Norwegians call it. And it was brought by Norwegian immigrants. And of course, we have lots of those in Wisconsin, so it's certainly not confined to Wisconsin. You find it in Minnesota and North Dakota and anywhere else. They're big chunks of Norwegians, but it's a very good example.
Now, if somebody calls me a backwoodser, a where am I probably, and should I be flattered or insulted?
Well, probably... probably not flattered, exactly.
Okay.
That's not one of these things which is strongly regional.
Okay.
That's not something I can say, oh, well, you know, you're from southern Rhode Island, if you say that. But we do, besides things which are distinctly regional, also cover sort of related things which are distinctly colloquial. They're not part of your, literary language. They're not the kind of things you use in formal writing or something like that. So backwoodser sort of comes into that category. What's interesting there is that, that we can trace it back a lot farther than we could before.
Oh, what have you learned about it?
So, you know, we have examples back to like 1856, which is a big improvement on what we knew about it before.
And the general idea is if you're a backwoodser, you're rustic, I guess hick would be a word people would use synonymously. And
sure.
I guess if you're a big city person, you might call somebody that.
Yes. And, of course, that's one of these concepts for which there are lots of terms, derogatory terms for hicks or whatever. And some of them are fairly general. Others are pretty localized.
We're talking with George Gabel. He's chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, looking at colorful words and phrases from around the country. And we want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Do you have one of these unique words? Maybe it's in your family, your community, or you associate it with Wisconsin. What is that phrase? What does it mean? Have you surprised people from other parts of the country when you've used this and had them look at you blankly when you said it? I had that when I used bubbler in another city around the country and then had to translate to drinking fountain. What's your favorite only in Wisconsin word or phrase? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe get some words, some data from you here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation about sayings that are unique to different regions around the country, including ones uniquely Midwestern, maybe uniquely Wisconsin, maybe even uniquely your neighborhood. Call in now at 800-642-1234. What is a local regional word that you know people from elsewhere don't? Or is there something, if you're from another state, something that you refer to, people here in Wisconsin don't get, or vice versa? Call in now, 800-642-1234. If you're thirsty, hit the bubbler first, 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. George Gabel is with us. He's chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. New update online covering a lot of phrases beginning with the letter B. George, I wanted to ask you, you know, we mentioned there's a multi-volume printed set of this, but you're able to update this on the internet. Does that make the work maybe more fun and maybe easier to be able to not have to reprint the whole six-volume set every time you discover a new set of words?
Well, yes, definitely. There is an online edition published by Harvard University Press, which basically reproduces the paper volumes with some corrections and some supplements. But we are posting these quarterly updates, which are new entries and entries that we've made big improvements on, lots of new evidence, on our own website, which is dare.wis.edu. And those are free. The Harvard University Press online edition, you know, is a subscription-based thing. But these are free. They're online. Anybody can go there and look at them, and they will also be incorporated into the online edition, but that's not something we're doing every quarter.
Well, before we get to our callers with their words from Wisconsin and elsewhere, I wanted to ask you about another colorful one that came up. I don't know if this is the new update or not, but the phrase "carry guts to a bear," and again, often with the usage, I guess you're not fit to carry guts to a bear.
It's another one of these insulting expressions. That's interesting in a number of ways. It's and one of them is that it's surprisingly old, and one of the improvements that we were able to make is to trace it back in American use into the 18th century. The earliest example now is from 1790, which gives it some history. The really interesting thing about this expression, as you look at it, colorful, folky expression, bears, you associate this with the American frontier, and so on. Well, it turns out that's not true. It's even older in England.
Okay.
There are examples in England back to the 17th century. So apparently, it originally in reference to, you know, like dancing bears. People had dancing bears.
Okay. And it would be a simple job to bring those guts, I guess, to the dancing bear.
Yes, I guess the lowest job, that would be the low man on the totem pole.
I'm with that.
The one who carries the guts to the bear.
Well, maybe. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it illustrates how things will hang on for an amazing length of time sometimes. Expressions like this.
Let's bring on our callers now. We've got Colleen with us in Janesville. Colleen, hi.
Hi, Hi. I wanted to ask about regional pronunciation, too, specifically the word roof. I've always said roof, and I didn't realize until I was an adult that most people say roof.
Roof.
Colleen, thank you. And is that something you track, too, George? Not, you know, everybody knows what a roof or a roof is, but we say it differently. Do you track those regional variations?
Yes. We, that's not the our center of what we are concerned with, but yes, variant pronunciations, and of course that's a well established one, and that's true of a bunch of double O words that you get the oo and oof variants. So I'm in the situation that I don't even know what comes naturally to me.
I was just thinking about that. I don't know now. I don't know what a roof. It's up on the roof. Up on the roof. Roof. I'm going to say roof.
Roof, 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 roof. Yeah. I know my grandmother said roof. I know I grew up hearing both. They both sound natural to me. Our evidence is that the roof pronunciation is especially common in the upper Midwest and in New England. I doubt it's exclusively in those areas. And you get the same thing with other similar things like hoof. Now, I think most Americans hoof, say hoof, hoof.
Yeah.
But Brits say hoof.
Hmm.
It's very strange. Root and root is a similar one. Now, there I know I say root, but I know my grandmother said root.
Well, thanks to the caller for getting us to get to the root or root of the matter. We'll go next to Deb on the line in Toma. Deb, hi.
Hi.
What word or phrase did you want to bring to us, Deb?
Well, down in Toma here, when you push a child on a swing and you go underneath them, I've always called that an underdog.
Uh-huh.
But here they call it an underduck.
An underduck. Huh. And you've heard multiple people, not just, you know, one set of neighbors use the phrase running duck?
Multiple. At my child's school, it's all underduck.
It's an underduck. Okay. Deb, thank you so much for that. George, children's games, play styles, things like that, I imagine, would be fertile ground for regional variation.
Absolutely. And that's not one that we've ever investigated. I will put it on my list.
All right. We'll look for underduck when you get to you.
Yes. Children's games, children's activities are, of course, a rich source because children learn from one another rather than being influenced by what they see on television as far as, you know, typical children's games. So they can be very regional. They can also be amazingly old. They, in some cases, go back much farther than you would expect.
Thanks a lot for the call, Deb. We're talking to George Gable from the Dictionary of American Regional English about those colorful words and phrases that are specific to parts of the country, maybe towns, cities, local, regional variation. Nora is with us next in Wausau. Nora, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about?
My experience with this is a little different because it's a brand name, not a word, but about 15 years ago, I moved from Wisconsin to Ohio. And on my way into work, on my first day at a new job there, I was looking to take cash out. And I stopped, but all the time machines, I went to a couple time machines that were broken. So I got into work, and I said, I can't find a time machine. And they looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, well, I found one, but it doesn't work. And they said, you want a real working time machine?
Yes, what date are you going for?
Time machine was a Wisconsin thing.
Yeah, and
been
actually,
there, Nora.
We recently did a survey just for Wisconsin, and that was one of the things we asked about, and that's not something we've got to actually analyzing the data on. When we were doing this the first time, that we were not aware of that as a question, but yes, what people call the cash machine is an interesting one, and we're going to get to that because we've collected some material on it, but we don't know what it means yet.
Nora, thanks. I hope you can get back to the future. Bobby is with us next in Pewaukee. Bobby, hi.
Hi, how are you doing? Yeah, the two phrases, I am from Brooklyn, the two phrases my kids always laugh at is dungarees and sneakers. You know, dungarees being the jeans and tennis shoes, obviously, here. So they always get, like I say, I always kind of get a chuckle when I say that.
Bobby, have you tried to train yourself out of dungarees and sneakers, or do you proudly wear those Brooklyn words?
I still wear them.
All right.
Sorry, did you say sneakers? Is that, that's your word?
Bobby?
Sneakers. Well, yeah, there are a lot of words for those. And actually, I think that things have changed over time on that because sneakers is kind of what I grew up with around here. But I think by the time my kids were wearing sneakers, it was completely dead. So things can change quickly.
And maybe at different paces in different places. Interesting. Bobby, thanks for that call. I want to go next to Dan in Independence. Dan, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I moved up here from Indiana the first time in the 70s. And I was in a bar one time, and I got to know a guy and stuff. And one day he wanted to borrow some money, but he said, borrow me $5 instead of loan me $5. So my first thought was, who am I supposed to borrow it from?
Dan, thank you. I will say I've heard that, and off the air I use it just kind of for fun. George, that kind of usage, borrow me instead of lend me, is that a common kind of variation?
Yeah, that's fairly common, but it does seem to be, especially around the Great Lakes area. So, not just Wisconsin, but all around the Great Lakes. We have examples of it back to the late 19th century.
Wow.
So it has quite a history.
Well, our caller, I hope you got the $5 back eventually. And George, thank you so much for spending this time with us. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
We've been talking to George Gable. He's chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. They track regional variations in the way we Americans speak, all the bubblers and parking ramps and beyond. You could still share yours, by the way. Head over to the Central Time Facebook page. We have a link, I believe, to the dictionary itself, and you can share your favorite Wisconsinism or maybe your least favorite one. That's at the Central Time Facebook page.